old Wigglesworth had been well off once. The key to his losses and his old age of penury was nothing more nor less than intemperance. He did not get drunk out and out, but he was never perfectly sober. Covert now employed him at a salary of $4 a week. Nathaniel, before mentioned, was a small boy with a boundless ambition, the uttermost end and aim of which was that he might one day drive a fast horse of his own on Third Avenue. In the meantime, he smoked cheap cigars, cultivated with tenderness upon his temples his bright brown hair in that form denominated soap lock, and swept out the office and ran the errands, occasionally stopping to settle a dispute by tongue or fist. For Nathaniel was brave and had a constitutional tendency to thrust his own opinions upon other people by force if necessary. Freed from the presence of the two, Mr. Covert sat meditating and writing alternately until he had finished a letter on which he evidently bestowed considerable pains. He then folded, enveloped, sealed it, and locked it in his desk. A tap at the door.
Come in.
Two persons enter. One is a hearty, middle-aged man of what is called the working classes. The other is your humble servant, who takes all these pains in narrating his adventures for your entertainment. His name is Jack Engel, and at the time of this introduction, he is of the roistering age of 20, stands about 5'10" in his stocking feet, carries a pair of brown eyes and red cheeks to match, and looks mighty sharp at the girls as they go home through Nassau Street from their work downtown. "Mr. Covert, I suppose," said my companion.
"That is my name, sir. Will thee be seated?"
"My name's Foster," settling himself in a chair and putting his hat on the table.
"You got a line from me the other day, I suppose?" "Ah, yes, yes," slowly answers the lawyer. Then looking at me, "Is this the young man, then?"
"This is the young man, sir, and we've come to see whether we can settle the thing. You see, I want him to be a lawyer, which is a trade he does not much like and would not himself have chosen. But I rather set my heart upon it, and he is a boy that gives in to me and has agreed to study at the business for 1 year faithfully. And then I have agreed to let him have his own way."
"He is not thy son, I think I understood," said Covert.
"Not exactly," answered the other, "and yet so near the same to make us no difference. Now you know my mind, and as I am a man of few words, I should like to know yours."
"Well, we will try him, Mr. Foster, at any rate."
Then turning to me, "If thee will come in here tomorrow forenoon, young man, between 9 and 10, I shall have more leisure for a talk, and we will then make a beginning. Although I warn thee in advance that it will depend entirely upon thyself how thee gets along. My own part will be nothing more than to point out the best road." Which endeth the first chapter. Chapter 2. The Worthy Milkman and How He Trusted People, and the Wonderful Luck He Had One Morning in Finding a Precious Treasure. This chapter is necessarily retrospective of the preceding one. Among the earliest customers of Ephraim Foster, there came one morning a little white-headed boy, neither handsome nor ugly. Ephraim kept a shop in one of the thoroughfares that cross Grand Street, east of the Bowery. He sold milk, eggs, and sundry etceteras, in winter adding to his vocations those of a purveyor of pork and sausage meat, which is a driving and thriving trade hereabout in cold weather. Fair America rivals ancient Greece in its love of pork. At the proper season, you may see, thickly set through the streets, the places for furnishing this favorite winter eating. Beautiful red and white slices, mighty hams, either fresh or smoked, sides and forequarters, and at intervals, a grinning head with fat cheeks and ears erect. Still more preferable to some, it is the powerfully spiced sausage meat or the jelly-like head cheese. In the preparation of the latter articles, the worthy Ephraim always did wonders, for folks had